So how are we doing? We now, I guess...
Suppose we finished the spring problems this week. How many people got all four of the spring problems working? No one will admit that in all four. How many people got three of the spring problems working? Okay, one man with three. That's very good. How many people got two of the spring problems working? No one else. How many people got one of the spring problems working? Okay, one, two, three. How many people got none of the spring problems working? Okay. So let's take a look, first of all, the people who got none of the spring problems working. Are there any comments or questions or frustrations or what is the issue? Yeah.
I think I'm not positive the problem is the after I get four pieces to compare, I think I'm having problems.
Well, which spring are you talking about? You're still
file
fragmentation.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. What happens, what I've been doing is I find one length and then it's matching pair, matching lengths, and I do it a second time. And I think that my problem is that my comparison algorithm, I think there's a hole in there somewhere that I have to examine. I think I'm missing the comparison.
Okay, fair enough. Let's see, any other things? How are you doing? Have you been getting anyone? Yeah, you're quiet. Okay, how? Which one are you? What? Particular two. Okay. And that's the only one that you tried, really. Okay, that's fair enough. What other one, which ones did you try that you failed on? Okay, so you had a compile error when you moved it over there. Okay, let's take a, first of all, C++ people, did any C++ people use the new programming challenges judge to verify that it worked? Okay? At some point, I'd like people to do that. I don't know what happened. Somehow last week there were a bunch of C++ people seemingly eager to try that. I don't know what's happened to them. But I'd be curious to see how that's working. Okay, let's maybe just go through these things a little bit. So one question is, you're complaining, I want partial credit, and my programs aren't working. So full credit is what I think you should aspire to. And there's a question of, let's think about the problems that you came close to, and let's see if there's any, we can have a discussion and some brainstorming about why people didn't get it working. So you were failing on which one of this week's one?
This week's CryptKicker 2.
How many people tried and failed CryptKicker 2? I see at least two people here, okay? Who got CryptKicker 2 working? Okay, well, how many times did it take, and was there any magic involved? Or?
Oh, yeah, I spent a long time on it. I basically couldn't come up with a test case for a long time that was failing. And it turned out I was just doing, there was one specific, if everything came out a certain way, I was bouncing out of the loop early.
So what was an example of the test case that was giving you trouble?
Basically, what I was doing is inside the loop, I was checking the length of each line, and if the line lengths didn't match up with the given string, the quick brown
right.
box, then I was saying, oh, let's just continue, we'll go on to the next test case, because that was obviously not it.
I see.
And so if none of them matched, I was like, continue. And it turned out that in that case, I never set the flag that said, yes, I found it, or no, I didn't find it. And so, when it exited the loop.
So you're saying yours was failing on a case where the quick brown box was never given?
Yes.
Okay, and that's what was giving you trouble?
Yes.
Okay, do any of you check for that case?
Yeah, so far I've had two test cases.
And otherwise, you were not getting through the judge until you fixed that. Is that what you say?
Right.
Okay. So you're failing in this case. You were failing on the case of basically input checking.
Right. And it was only one specific set. So I checked it a couple times. I took the quick brown box and encoding, and then changed one letter in it, and it would work fine. I'm like, okay, that works. It can find when it's not exact. But in the case where every single line was a different.
I see. So that was sort of it was a question of the case when it was obviously not doing that. That's when you failed.
Yeah.
Do any of you try to use or look at the newsgroup associated with these problems? So where might there be some other resources? You're not getting stuck.
I have trouble finding any type of newsgroups on events.
Okay, has anybody found on UVA site? So you're saying that the UVA news groups, what happened? There is a news group for every problem, you're telling me.
No.
Is that true or no?
Every
set of 100 problems or so. Okay. And and when you get there, what you'll find people will typically do is say, my program isn't working, here it is. And does anybody answer them, or do they just sort of say, yeah, please? Okay. I encourage you to not go to the newsgroup as your first step, okay? But those of you who are in some struggle of desperation, going to the newsgroups might not be a bad idea, okay? I have also told that the programming challenges newsgroups work. It isn't sort of on the programming challenges judge. Of course, nobody's presumed. So you might want, if you want to post, you might want to post or have discussions on there. Of course, not say how many people are reading it at this point. But at the very least, you may want to check out the UVA judge, okay, news groups, to see what your problems are, to see what the test cases are, and things like that. I would probably not recommend that, but you use your judgment, okay? Again, I want it to be, this to be a, sort of, I don't want people, to sort of, it's a disappointing thing if you spend all week, you beat out, you get nothing, and you go home, and that I don't really want to have happen. Okay. Any other questions? Any other ideas of where you might go if you get stuck? Okay. What I think is the case, so this is, again, or this is why I told you I was going to give you a B for getting one per week and an A for getting two per week. Okay. And so, again, that's what I was going to guarantee you. We'll see how this goes along. The problems that are coming up, in fact, starting, I think, this week, are going to be, what I will say, for the most part, there's going to be less brute force programming and more thinking involved, okay? That's both good and bad, okay? So it's probably the case that more problems can be answered with shorter programs. On the other hand, it's also the case that it requires a brain behind them to write the program, okay? Which is important. So, so sometimes you may be getting caught up here on dumb cases, like what you just are mentioning. Hopefully in the future you'll get caught up on smart cases, the hard ones. Okay, the whole algorithmic questions may become harder. Any questions? Any other questions or comments about the string problems? Okay. I think I'd like to move on, but any other questions or comments? Any other problems people got stuck on that they wanted to chat about? Okay. So today, what we're going to start to do is to start to talk about the next set of problems. And again, what I will tell you is that if you started working on one of these problems and you didn't get it, you're welcome to try to get it a little after the deadline. So I don't mind. If you figure out how to make it work next week, submit it and everything's going to be okay. Okay, so you still have a chance to go back to your old problems and do something with them. Okay? But I want to make sure people try to keep up here as well. Okay, and we have a lot of new problems this week. So the problems this week are going to be related to sorting. Okay, and I'd like to just outline the problems quickly so we start to think about them. And then we'll talk a little bit about sorting. We may want to just discuss the problems at least initially. So the first problem is you have a gangster. Okay, and again, I happen to like it. My Spanish friend made up the name of the gangster, which I thought Vito Deadstone. I thought was a very, I know Deadstone's a traditional Italian name. Anyway, I always thought that was amusing. But anyway, he's claiming that he wants to move and visit members of his family. Members of his family live at different places on the street. Okay, so he wants to move to a street where all his family members live. And he wants to pick up, because he likes members of his family, he wants to buy the house that will minimize the total distance to his family. So he's gonna, he gave his input the addresses of each of his family members. Okay? And you want to try to identify the address such that if he bought the house there, he would minimize the total distance between that house location and all of his family. Okay? Does everybody sort of get the idea of that? Not any questions here. So intuitively, where does Mr. Deadstone want to live? Is it at the top, you know, at the high address, at the low address, or at a middle address? A middle would seem like a better idea. Okay? Now exactly what the right notion of middle is something we have to think about. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay? Is there any questions about the basic vision of the problem? Okay? So that's one we'll talk about. And I'm talking about sorting in here. Any idea why sorting might be an interesting thing to do here? Okay, or relevant thing to do, may or may not be. But we'll talk about why you sort things later, okay? Then maybe that will suggest something. Okay, what's the next problem? The next problem is the bridge problem. And this is actually a cute problem. You have people on... You have a bridge linking two sides. Okay, this is safety. You know, you want to get this group of people from here across the bridge. Now, there's two problems. One is it's night, so you can't see without a flashlight. Okay, fortunately, they have one flashlight. The other thing is the bridge is very rickety, so you can't have more than two people walk across the bridge at any one time, or else the bridge collapses. Okay. How do you get the people across the bridge as quickly as possible? I don't know, how do you get people across the bridge in this situation? You have N people on this side of the bridge. You have one flashlight. How can you get those people across the bridge? Is there any way to get everybody across the bridge? Okay. So one possibility is that you have you send two people over with the flashlight so they can see their way across the bridge. One waits here, and the other one runs back with the flashlight. Okay? And then after, you know, presumably, you know, N trips, everybody's going to get across the bridge, right? Everybody agree with that? Now, the question is, what's the fastest way to get everybody across the bridge? Because it turns out, fortunately, we know also for each one of the people on this side of the bridge how fast they can run. Okay? So if we assume that everybody was the same speed, okay, it probably didn't matter who brought the flashlight back and who was paired up with each other, right? If everybody was the same speed, you could have two people come across, okay? They would, one of them would stay, bring the flashlight back and forth in something like... How many trips would be needed if you have N people? How many trips would be needed?
No.
2N plus 1? 2N plus 1. Well, let's look at how many trips are forward and how many trips are back. Okay? It might be one way to think about it. So going forward, I start out with 2, I leave 1 here. I'm then going to have another forward who's going to bring me to 2. The number of people who are left on this side. Total, I think I need is N minus 1 forward trips. Why? Right? Does everyone agree that I need N minus 1 trips going this way? Okay?
Yeah.
Because one bridge trip is going to leave me 2 people here. All the other trips will leave me 1 person here, right? And how many trips go back? I think it's N minus 2. So that gives me a total of 2N minus 3 trips. Everyone agree? Okay. So I would argue that if everybody was the same speed, we pretty much know the right way to get everybody across that bridge, right? But unfortunately, everybody is not the same speed, okay? And in fact, you're told how fast these people are, okay? So how long does it take two people to run across the bridge with a flashlight? You have one guy who's faster, one guy who's slow. How fast is, you know, who governs how fast they get across with the flashlight?
Slow
guy, right? Okay? So, intuitively, what kind of a strategy do you want to have here? Okay? Just think about it, yeah?
I mean, obviously you want to have the flashlight going back and forth, and since that's what's really limiting it as fast as possible. So what you don't want to do is pair up your fastest guy with your slowest guy.
So in principle, you say you don't want to pair up the fastest guy with the slowest guy. Okay?
Over the course of the entire thing,
yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, the fastest guy can bring the flashlight back the fastest.
Right.
So what happens is, it doesn't really matter who you pair him up with. If at the minimum amount of time is going to be the total number of speed that they can all go, the thing is going to determine how fast you get that flashlight back. So you actually don't want to pair the fastest guy with every one of them. And he just needs to bring the flashlight back at the maximum speed.
Well, what is clear to me, okay, so that's an interesting question. Who do we pair this thing up? In principle, it seems like we want the guy bringing the flashlight back. So the guy who brings the flashlight back be fast or slow?
Fast.
I think everybody agrees we want the flashlight guy to be fast. There seems to be an advantage to having similarly speed people go over together, right? A bad thing about having a fast guy and a slow guy running together is the fast guy is hobbled by the slow guy, okay? So part of me says that this, to a certain extent, you want similar speeded people together when possible, okay? Can you use this to make some kind of an idea, or what kind of idea, how do you pair people up to make this trip so that we complete it as fast as possible? Okay? So this, I claim, is an interesting, acute problem. Okay? It's not obvious to me how you do it, but it's something that you should be thinking about. Okay? Really requires some thought here. Okay? Any questions? Yes.
You're counting the time that the time to bring the flashlight back, correct?
Well, God, whatever they count. What do they say they're counting? Okay? They say that the time is, for each test case, output the total number of seconds required for all N people to cross the bridge. On subsequent lines, output a strategy for achieving this. Okay, each line consists of either one or two integers to determine which people cross the bridge at each time. Okay? And, so the question here is, note the crossings alternate directions as it is necessary to return the flashlight to cross. Okay? So the question is, how do we get everybody across the bridge safely? Okay? Any questions? Okay, so this, I think, is a cute problem. Okay? And requires a certain amount of thought to figure out what the right way to do it is. Okay? Any questions in principle here? Okay? That one, I think, takes some thinking. What is the next problem? The next problem is the shoemaker's problem. This is another scheduling problem that's kind of interesting. Okay, you have a shoemaker who takes orders. He knows for every job, what does it say here, to be precise? Shoemaker has jobs. Every job, takes a certain amount of time to finish in terms of days. And there's a penalty for what happens when you get it late, in terms of a fine per day. Okay, so let's just take a look at this. Let's say a shoemaker has three jobs to do. Let's say job one takes 5 days, and the penalty is going to be $1 per day. Let's say job two takes 2 days, and the late penalty is $2 per day. And let's say job three takes 2 days,
and the late penalty is $5 per day. How should the shoemaker schedule his time to minimize the penalty, given that he has to get all the jobs done? Okay? So does everybody see, if not, questions about what the problem is? Shoemaker has a set of jobs. He knows how long it will take him to do it. And everyone, of course, wants their job done now. Okay? Instead, there's a penalty for getting it done, you know, late. Okay, well, late means not now, I think, of this much per day. How can the shoemaker schedule his jobs so as to minimize the penalty? Suppose, let's say, shoemaker does job one, then job two, then job three. How much of a penalty will the shoemaker pay? Well, okay, I will say that he will pay, depending upon whether we count time zero as I don't remember exactly where you pay the first penny a penalty. But let's say that you pay a penalty like this. That it'll cost the shoemaker $5 if he starts the job now.
Or starting to work.
What?
He's like 24. He's going to pay $2 per day.
$2 per day for the other one.
Yeah, so that's your 10. Like, except for you only
what's it paid?
For each day of delay before starting to work.
Okay, so
they pay the penalty before starting.
Yeah.
So there's no penalty here.
Oh, no, there isn't.
No, there isn't, because he's
starting. You start on this job here.
Right. What I meant is that penalty, the twos are for the second.
Right. So the penalty here, he doesn't pay any penalty there.
Yeah.
This guy is going to be paying penalties. Okay. Actually,
three is $5.
Three pays $5 per day.
That's
the wrong way.
So what would be a better schedule for this? The total penalty here is what? 5 times 7, $35, and this is 5 times 2 plus $10. It'll cost the shoemaker $45 to do the job this way. Is there a better way to do the job?
Yeah. I mean, you've got your shortest job with your highest penalty. You know, it's obvious you should get, or it seems obvious you should get that one out of the way first.
So you want to do job 3 first, and then what do you want to do? The job 1 second, which is the job one.
No, it's the wrong way.
I think you're probably right. Two,
yeah.
And one. If we do it this way, how much of a penalty do we pay? Judge, $2 for each of the 2 days that this guy waits. And for job one, we're paying $1 each of 5 days, right?
4 days,
right, to get started. And so if we do that, we're only paying how much? $8. And that, I think, is the best way. So the question is, how should the shoemaker order the jobs in order to save the amount of money? Okay? Well, so they would give you a correct algorithm. Maybe slow.
Sorry.
The guaranteed correct algorithm for this problem. Yeah?
Slow but guaranteed correct would just be to try every single combination.
Try every single permutation of the jobs. But is that going to work on this problem
when you say how big it is? How many jobs can he have? 1,000 jobs, okay? So that I don't think is going to do the job.
Okay, yeah?
I think he was on the right track. Sort through the jobs. Figure out which jobs sorted from that'll take the least amount of time to the greatest amount. Then look at each of the jobs sequentially. Of the ones that take the fewest days, figure which one have the highest penalty and do those first.
So you say you want to always do the shorter job before a longer job.
Right.
Well, does everybody believe that? Does it always pay to do a shorter job before a longer job? What would be a good example where that's not true?
If that longer job at the beginning has penalty of $1,000 a day.
Right. But if the length three job had a penalty of $1 per day, and the length two job had a penalty of this had a job of $1 million a day, and this had a penalty of $1 per day, are you better off starting with job, the short job or the long job?
Long job.
Okay. So certainly sorting them by length doesn't seem to me to be the right thing to do. Okay, yeah. Sort them by price. Okay. Can we sort them by price and do them just in the order of price? Okay.
It seems like no matter which one you sort by first, you could run into a problem just by, raising the education length.
So what would be an example of give me an example of a problem for sorting them by length.
You have a $1 per day.
By price. Okay, yeah.
And a $2 per day penalty.
$1 per day and $2 per day.
Right. So if you can do the first one, to do the $1 per day first, but that only takes...
Let's say this one took 1 million days.
Yeah, exactly.
And this one took 1 day to do. Okay. You would pay a price of, by starting this job first, you would pay, you said if the penalty here was high. What exactly are you saying? I'm a little confused here. I want to see some example which is bad. You're trying to say that it's bad to sort by...
Right. I mean, if one of those is going to be bad, 1 in 1 million or 1 in 1 million.
Right. So the shortest job, shortest job first is bad. What about cheapest job first? Okay.
By a factor of the two.
Well, why don't we always insist on doing the cheapest job first? Okay. Well, I don't think this is $2 here. I think this is an example where cheapest job first is the wrong strategy. Right? Does everybody agree that the cheapest job first is the wrong strategy here? Because the cheapest job first, this will clearly be bad. Okay? Because we will pay a cost of... cheapest job first would be put the million here and then do the job of one. This guy paid all the penalties. It would be much better to have this job be first and then that one, regardless of what the relative values of the penalties were. Does everybody agree? That if I have the most expensive job first, I will put that one first. If I have the cheapest one first, I put this one first. So either cheapest or most expensive by itself doesn't seem to be the right strategy either. Yeah? So why don't we go and think about it? Okay. I guess in my sense, this is now seemingly not... delicate. You need to sort the jobs in some way. That's what the shoemaker is doing.
If you sort it so that it's what if it's fine if it's the most expensive fine divided by how many days it would take?
Then you can sort it by that. The question is it correct or not? You have to now argue with me that it's correct. And you don't have to argue with me, I'm not on fighting with anybody. You have to argue with the judge. Okay. What is the correct strategy here? Okay? And so I claim that you're doing some kind of sorting, I think. But what the criteria is interesting. Okay, any questions? Okay? Finally, the last problem for the week, okay, is one that is you're going to be writing a replacement system for EasyPass, basically. You know what EasyPass is? Okay. EasyPass is this system that lets you pay. paved, well, actually, it's easy pass on the New Jersey Turnpike, to be precise, okay? The New Jersey Turnpike, you pay on a road depending upon how far you travel on that road, right? So if you travel the whole length, you know, what is the New Jersey Turnpike, first of all? It is a road from New York to Philadelphia, I guess the important thing. And that there are exits on the New Jersey Turnpike. And you pay a toll as a function of the distance between the exits. If you travel the whole road, you pay more toll than if you travel the, just a little link, okay, on the road. And what they want you to do is, they have their EasyPass machine readers that tells you what time you entered, that reads license plates, and records what time did the car enter, at what exit, and at what time did it leave. Okay, so you give it up, yes. Well, unfortunately, not quite that true, because they also are telling you now that the rate per mile, the toll per mile, okay, is is changing as a function of time. So what do we want to do? We want to keep the people off the roads during rush hour, right? How do you keep people off the roads at rush hour? Charge them a higher toll. Okay, and this is coming. I mean, they don't do this very much now. But I can guarantee you that 5 years from now, the people who are riding home from New York City at rush hour will be the rich people, okay, who will pay the higher tolls. So this problem says the following. You're given a toll spray. The travel on a road costs a certain amount per kilometer, depending upon the time that you entered the road. Okay? So getting on the road at rush hour is going to cost you more than getting on the road at midnight. Okay? And so basically what you have to do is to manage, basically tell at the end, compute to keep everybody's bill. You know when they're on the road, got on, you know when they got off, you know the fare structure, compute everybody's bill. Okay? Any questions? Okay? And if yes? Yeah, so it looks like, again, it's a monthly bill. You're getting billed every month. So MM is the month, the day, the hour, and the minute. So if I look at the sample input, what is that line supposed to tell me? The first line, the 10, tells me how many pennies per kilometer, or how many cents per kilometer I pay at a given time. Okay, and it looks like, again, in the morning and evening rush hour, they gouge me. Okay? So this tells me every hour how the rates change. The next line tells me the license plate number, then the day, the month, the day, so it means on January 1st at 6:01, ABC car entered at exit 17. Then another car, okay, a minute later, entered an hour later at 7 in the morning, left on, left exit 95. We turn the page. We'll find out that, in fact, again, these records, it looks like they didn't come in the right order. But in fact, that, this message, this data is getting beamed back to our central computer, and it looks like it gets a little out of sync. But the last line on the input tells us that 765 got on at exit 17, and it left at exit 95. ABCD entered at exit 17 and left at 95. If you look at their output tolls, you'll find that they paid different amounts because one got on, even though they traveled the same distance, one got on at a different time than the other. Okay? And your job is to compute the tolls. Okay? Any questions? Okay? So how do these problems compare? Let's think about it. Which problem looks like the one that requires the least amount of thinking? Okay? Algorithmic thinking. The last one. This one here does not seem to me that this requires anything in the way of algorithms particularly. This is a programming problem, pure and simple, okay? You're
manipulating numbers. You have to do your arithmetic right. Okay? But there, I don't see, you know, this is one that conceptually I think is the simplest one. Okay? You know, you have to do some work. You have to pair entry and exit records up. Okay? And you have to do some work. But so this one is the most tractable without thinking. Which is the most tractable with thinking that people think about? Yeah?
Maybe Vito's family.
Vito's family might be the, I think it's probably in principle the easiest of the bunch. But you have to think about what the right notion of center is. Okay? And I think some people, so you have to think about that one a little bit. It might be deceptively easy. Okay? But we'll see what happens. Any questions? So any questions about this week's problems? Okay? Yes?
I have a question about Vito's family.
Yeah.
The house that Vito eventually buys, it can be any number from 0 to 30,000?
It looks like, yes, that Vito lives on a long street. So, yes, the numbers, house numbers are between 0 and 30,000.
And it can be one of the, and it doesn't have to be, but it can be one of the numbers of a family member, if I'm reading this.
Yeah, as I interpret this, he can visit. Yeah, he can certainly stay with the family. As far as I interpret this from, there's no notion of that certain, once something is used, he can still use that same number again. Yeah. Yeah, so he can stay with a family. Think of these as apartment buildings. This is in New York, you know, so there's plenty of place apartments okay. He can live in at each address. Okay? Any questions?
Yeah. Actually, I have a question. It looks like at the same point when it says first we get number test cases, which is 2.
Yeah.
And it says we get the number of relatives, which is 2. And then they currently live at 2 and 4.
Yeah.
So if he was going to split the distance between them, wouldn't that be 3?
Well, okay, that's what it says. So look what the output is. The output here is not the house address. Vito doesn't want to, you're not the only one that can tell where Vito is. You tell how much traveling will Vito have to do.
So Vito has family members at 2 and address 4. Where should Vito live?
3.
He should live at 3. If he lives at 3, how much will he pay in distance?
Well, he'll have to visit 1 each way or 2.
What about the next example? Let's look at this. Next one we've got is
the people live, Vito's friend lives at 2, 4, and 6. What is the most central location
here?
4. We in principle think 4, so we can in fact share a room. If so, what is the cost going to be? 0 plus 2 plus 2 or 4, which is what I believe is being output here. Okay? Any questions?
So the fact that, so we don't really, aren't really worried so much about Vito's location as we are about Vito's travel costs, right?
Any questions?
Okay? So those are the problems for this week. And I want to claim that I think they're interesting problems, kind of cute, okay? But I think that they share a certain flavor of sorting about them. And I'll talk a little bit about sorting now, unless people have any questions about these problems or other problems. Any questions? Okay? So, first question is, why do we sort? First of all, let's just make sure, has anybody been in a course where they talked about sorting? Yes. Who here has never taken a course where they talked about sorting? Okay, it's probably not a computer scientist alive to say that. Okay? So you've seen a lot of sorting algorithms. And the thing that is important about sorting, in my mind, I mean, certainly, I'll talk a little about sorting algorithms. I like sorting algorithms. Sorting algorithms are good. But probably for your purpose, the actual way that you do the sorting is, in general, less important than what you can do with it once it's sorted. So why do you actually sort things? So a bigger question is, why is it that people keep teaching you about sorting? Does anybody have any ideas? Okay, why do we teach about sorting?
Yes. It's usually a lot easier to look at data if it's sorted from either greater to small or smaller to large. A lot of other algorithms are based on that notion that you're dealing with sorted data.
Yeah, so somehow, once the data is sorted, you can do something with it. What can you do with data when it's sorted,
for an example?
Yeah.
Like, if you have an array that's sorted, you can find whether an element or where it is in log plugin.
So sorting makes search faster is one of the things that sorting does, okay? What other things does sorting do? Partition the data, and what does that mean exactly? I see, so you can use it to group things. So somehow, let's say that we were talking about this problem with the roadmap, with the toll booths. Maybe your first thing you might want to do is to group the data by what? It could be where you sort them by their entry time or exit time. That might be useful to sort there. What might also be useful to sort by? The time. What other things might be useful to sort by on that
license card?
I would think license plates are useful things to sort on. Why? For the reason you're saying, you're grouping. You want to figure out what is Skeeter's bill for going back and forth to the city. Well, you would want to sort it so all of Skeeter's records are together. Okay? And so clustering things by similarity is an important thing you do with sorting. What other things do we do with sorting? Okay, yeah.
Min-max
and medians, okay? Where is the minimum element after sorting?
Either beginning or the end.
Well, better to sort them. Maybe it sorts the first element, okay? Where is the maximum element? Where is the median element? Should be in the middle, right? Okay? So that's a good thing you can get for sorting. What other things can you do with sorting? Okay, any other things come to mind? Or?
It makes it easy to find duplicates.
Okay. So if you want to, you have an array and you want to remove duplicates. How do you remove duplicates from an array? Okay. I give you a set of data. How do you remove the duplicates? What's the first step?
Sort them.
Sort them. Now the duplicates are next to each other. So now what do? Right, okay, so now you know that all the identical elements are together. You can now go through it and either just whatever you change from one, loop from one to end, whatever you change from one element to where element I is different from I plus one, maybe print the new element out. You only want to print one of each element from the set. Or you can do some more fancy manipulation to eliminate it from the array. Okay? So sorting is your friend, as they say. There's lots of things you can do with sorting efficiently. Okay? Where sorting is your first step. So algorithmically, how much time does it take to do sorting in the big O sense? Does anyone know?
Yeah. N log n.
N log n is the real big... N log n is the worst case complexity of sorting if you use a very efficient algorithm. You know, the most efficient algorithms. What are the out-sorting time complexities of dumb sorting algorithms? Yeah? N squared. Does this make a difference? Okay. Well, it depends. Okay. Does it make a difference? If n equals 100, does it make a difference?
Not really.
Okay. What is the difference? And I eyeball it. 100 squared is what? 10,000. What's 100 log 100? The log is probably, 2 to the 10th is 1,000. What? 2 to the 10th is 1,000. So this is 100. If n was equal to 100, the log is going to be less than 10, probably 6 or 7, something like that. 2 to the 6th is 64. So this is going to be something like 600 versus 10,000. Is that a difference? It's not a big difference. Suppose n equals 1,000. Now what is the difference? What's 1,000 squared? 1,000,000. And what is 1,000 log 1,000? What's the log of 1,000? So it was about 10. 2 to the 10 is 1,000, right? So this is 10,000 to 1,000,000. Is that a difference? To me, that starts to be a big difference. Okay, and by the time you get to 10,000, it gets to be a very big difference. So for small amounts of n, it doesn't really matter what sorting algorithm you use, but it makes a difference when you start talking about large numbers. Okay? So that's interesting. But so what's interesting is that for a lot of algorithm problems, basic algorithm problems, the fastest algorithm is sort it using an n log n algorithm and then do the thing to retrieve the answer. Okay? So how do you tell if n elements are all distinct? Okay? I give you, I want to make sure there's no duplicates in the array. How do we do it?
Just sort once and then loop the array and make sure that consecutive elements are good.
Right. Does everybody agree with that? Does everybody understand that algorithm? Believe they could program that? Yeah, that's not a problem, right? So that's an n log n algorithm for testing if all the elements are unique, and in fact, there's no better way to do it. Okay? So that's the right way to test for uniqueness in the worst case. How do we remove, get one copy of every element? Well, we've talked about that. You sort it, and you sweep through the array. Whenever there's a transition, print it out, the new element. Okay, or copy it over to another array, or do some fancy manipulating to get rid of it. How do we find the kth largest item in the set? The median or something like that? We said basically sort it and look in the kth spot in the array, right? Now that, it turns out, that's an n log n algorithm for this problem. In fact, if you're very, 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 very clever, you can do it in linear time. Does it pay to be very, 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 very clever?
Depends. I mean, if you have 100 elements, you could possibly read, maybe not.
So let's take again, what's the difference between n log n and n? So here we have n log n and n log n. What's the difference for n equals 100? N is 100. What was n log n? Something like 600, right? For n equals 10,000, what is the difference? N was going to be 10,000. What's the log of 10,000? The log of 1,000 we said was... So what's the power of 2 that we raise 2 to the x to get 10,000? Well, something like that, okay? That's 12 times 10,000 is 120,000. Is there a difference between 10,000 and 120,000? Not overwhelmingly, okay? In general, there's a relatively small difference between n log n and n for any reasonable n. You know, so the fact that I can do it in linear time shouldn't necessarily impress you as a programmer. Because it is a more complicated thing, you know, and, you know, you're talking about pretty much, you know, log n grows slowly. So if you ask me, you say, you've got to write a program to find the median, okay, and you have an hour to do it, I would probably do, sort it and pick the middle. Because I could do that not in an hour, I could do that in 10 minutes or less, okay, so that's a good thing. Suppose I want to find the most frequently occurring element, the mode of a set. Okay, the mode, remember, we don't, mode was the element that occurred the most often. How would I do that, solve that problem? Okay, yeah.
Sort it and then find that element and you'll know they'll all be together.
Sort it and go through the beginning and the end. Sort it to sweep the array, right? Now when I sort it, they're going to occur in runs of these blocks. Then have a linear sweep where I keep track of where does the block start, where does it end, how many elements are between that, right? How much time will that take once it's sorted to find the modes? Linear time, right? Does everybody agree you can do that? Well, that's an easy thing to do. What if, let's say, that I... give you a bunch of items. Let's say I give you a bunch of records that I'm storing in memory. Okay, there's some input order here. Okay, let's say that there's an original input lines. And I then go and do some operations where I swap them. And now I ask you, by the way, print them out in their original order. Okay? Can anybody give me a way that would make it possible for me to recover the original order? Yeah?
You kept track of the swaps. You can just do an internal swap back.
I could do these swaps back later, but that's pretty kind of complicated. Yeah, what's a simple way to reconstruct the order?
I know some sorts involve making a copy of the array and having that second array having it sorted. So what you can do is do sort it that way, and this way you have the original permutation.
So what do you say? We keep the a copy of the original, right. And then, so in case they give it to me. That's probably true, but what if these are long things? It's a big thing. You might think of a whole other copy of it in control. Kind of. So what possibility is it where I swap that? This is actually maybe not a bad idea. You want to keep a, so when you're swapping them, what you really do is you swap pointers to the original items. Right? Okay. And then now, in fact, your swaps will take constant time regardless of how big this thing is. That might be a good way to do it. What would be another way to do it that I'm looking for?
If you tagged everything in the original array with, you know, some sortable, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, then you sort of.
Right. Suppose I add another field to my record. What was its original position? Okay. Now then, once I scramble these things, if I want to rediscover the original position, I just have to sort them on this other key. Right? Everybody sort of agree with that? Okay. So, it's, you know, sorting is your friend because it's sort of the important order. Given two sets, how do I figure out, find the intersection of those sets? Which elements are in both of them? Okay, what would be the way to find out which elements are in both sets? Yeah. So one possibility is I sort what I take a look at each element from this array, and I look it up in another array. Okay. If I did that with brute force, is this element in here searching linearly? That would take how much time if this had n elements and this had n elements? N times n.
Yeah? Seems like what you should do is sort both arrays, and then you can go through them each once. You know, you can block this off. You can take the first element here. If they match up, that's fine. If this one, you have to do a comparison, basically, to find out whether you need to advance one or the other.
Right, so one way to do it is, it maybe is the cleanest of the ways. Suppose I sort the elements in one set, and I sort the elements in another set. Now, the one that is alphabetically first here, suppose I take the one that is the smallest alphabetically of these two. The smallest one of these two, if it's in both of the sets, it's going to be the smallest in both of them, right? And so you can now identify with the smallest element, the smallest of the two. Is its partner in the other set at the top? If so, they're both there. And you can now delete them or move your pointers down. If not, move one pointer down and compare. Does everybody sort of see that? How I'm doing that? So once they're sorted and I'm doing a linear time, look down the lists to identify who the winner is. Okay, I'm merging the lists in some sense. In linear time, once they're sorted. Everybody agree with that? Are there any questions? Or so this is also easy to do. Suppose I give you an array of integers. Okay? Suppose I give you a set of integers. 23, 19, 42, 21... 16, and ask, are there two integers in here that add up to 40? Okay? How would I solve the problem of asking, are there two integers that add up to 40? Okay? Yeah.
Well, sort the array first, and...
No, it wasn't dumb algorithm. This is a simple dumb algorithm. It won't be a way to tell if two integers are at 40, yeah? Right. So basically, 4i goes from 1 to j, 4i goes to 1 to, you know, j goes from 1 to whatever. Does the i plus the j's add up to be 40? Okay? Is there a slicker way to do that? Okay? Yeah?
Sort it.
That's the magic word. What if I sort it now? What good is it? Now, what sorting it do for me? 19? 16? 19? 21? 23? 42? What? Anything below 40 certainly can throw out. What else is there?
And you do I to J, once you get a value that's greater than 40, you know you can stop, you know, just keep going.
Once I get any one of my values is greater than 40.
Well, you add them up, and you find you get a value greater than 40.
So you're saying you want to still do a 4i goes from 1 to j, 1 to n, 4j goes to 1 to n, but exit whenever the sum is greater than that. True, but that might still take n squared time. I don't know if that's really made it faster. Yeah. So you want to say the following. Let's think about this for a second. You're saying that you want to compare the top to the bottom one. Okay, let's say that this one's 32. What about it now? You want to compare these two.
You add them together.
Yeah.
And if the sum is over 40, then you turn the bottom.
If the sum is is larger than 40, okay, you want to claim that you can throw this one out. Why? Because this is the smallest possible thing to edit. What if it's less than, what if it is smaller than 40? That's actually not the way I might have done it, but I think that you're right, Jim. Okay? If the sum of these two is bigger than 40, the smallest possible thing would, you know, there's no way that this could be involved with anybody, and we throw it out. If the smallest value is less than 40, we throw that one out. Okay, what if it's equal to 40?
Why do
we print it? Okay, so that one's easy. So if that's an interesting idea. So now how much time does it take to do it? Now that we've done that.
That's linear,
right? So once it's sorted, you can zip through this. And notice if you do this now, what if I said, oh, I didn't mean 40, I meant 45? Well, once you've got them sorted, you know, you can sort of do this as many times as you want, right? So sorting is your friend. That's sort of the point here, okay? So, a good thing to say when you've got nothing else to say about a problem is there anything I can sort that doesn't do me any good, okay? Any questions? Well, I was basically going to do the same thing. I wanted to sort of sweep through. Another way you could have done it, okay, which is not as efficient, it's not the way I was necessarily going to think about it, was you look up the replacement. So suppose I'm looking for 40, okay? If I want somebody to pair with this, that means 40 minus 16 is what I'm looking for, right? So I can do a binary search, if you wish, or a search to find is 40 minus 16 in the dictionary? Or if not, where is it? Right? So I could do it by doing n binary searches, but that's n log n. Is there a way, though, I could do this so that all my searches would take linear time total? And it's basically the kind of an idea that you would have. You notice that as I move down here, the partner, the potential partner with this, as I move down, its potential partner is moving up, right? So the way that I would probably do it is I would say, who is my potential partner with this number? And walk up from here. And then when I say, if that doesn't match, who's the potential partner for this one? I keep walking up. How much work would I do in doing that total? Okay. Well, every time I walk up, that will take me one step. How much total walking will I have to do, or can I do over the total process? And I'm never walking backwards, right? So every time I look at one of these, I'll walk up a certain number of steps. The total number of steps I would have walked up was linear. Okay. So this is basically the algorithm that you had in mind. I think your version is actually a little slicker than this. Okay? Any questions?
Yeah.
Okay? So sorting is your friend is the important thing to take away from this.
Okay, any questions? Now, look, there are a lot of sorting algorithms out there. And maybe next class I'll talk about the sorting algorithms. What I want to do is talk a little bit about sorting programs, okay, or sorting routines. So there's two things you should know about sorting. One is, several things you should know about sorting. One is now you know what it's good for, okay? Second thing is, how do you get it done in your programming language? One way to do it is to write your own sort routine. But I will claim to you that all of you, has anyone here who has never written a sorting program, routine? Has everybody written some kind of sorting program somewhere along the line? So you know you can do it, but the important thing is to know that other people have also done it. Okay? So actually, before you can talk about multi-criteria sorting, my advice for you is to learn about what is your sorting library function that is available in your favorite programming language, okay? How many people have used a built-in sort for their programming language? How many people have never used a built-in sort? Okay? So it's important to know about this in principle to do it. So if you use C, okay, C is maybe just the clumsiest of the bunch, but it's important to know about the built-in libraries. Let me just tell you a little bit about the built-in libraries for all of our three favorite programming languages. C has a sorted function called qsort. Does anybody want to guess what algorithm qsort uses?
Quicksort.
We can guess, but it doesn't make any difference. It sorts. It says it sorts. I don't care how it does it. It's a generic sort program that works as follows. It takes 1, 2, 3, 4 arguments, okay, to sort an array. It only sorts arrays. The first pointer is a pointer to the array, or the name of the array, if you wish, that you're sorting. There's a pointer to the lowest element in the array that you want to sort. The next argument says, how many elements in that array do you want to sort? Maybe you don't want to sort the whole thing. You may only want to sort the first 10 elements. Okay? It then asks you for what is the width in bytes of the particular element to be sorted, of each element. Okay? And finally, it asks you for a pointer to a comparison function to do that sorting. Okay? So what is the point here? You want a generic sorting program. That means it has to be able to sort according to what is, you know, increasing order, decreasing order, any kind of weird order you might want. You're really going to make it generic, right? So in order to make it generic, you need to specify a comparison function. So how would I sort an array of integers? Let's say my array of integers was labeled A. In C, how would I qsort my array of integers? I would say qsort a pointer to my array, which I believe in C is just the name of the array. Does everybody agree with that? Okay. Or if I wanted to sort from, let's say, from the 10th out position on, I might say give me a pointer to A sub 10. Right? That would tell me from the 10th position of the array on. But then I start with a pointer to my array. I then need to know how many elements am I sorted. Well, let's say there are 100 elements that I have value, or n elements that have value. Those are what I want to sort. My sorting function now needs to know how big is the thing that it's sorting. Remember, this was an array of characters. To look up a particular element, each character is only 1 byte long. How big is an integer? You say 4. So I could say 4 here. If you're really sure an integer is 4 bytes,
you chose the size of it.
But since I don't know that it's 4 integers, I could say size of it to tell me how big it is. So now I know that not only is, now I know from all this
What are the where is the elements that I'm going to be looking at? Well, as far as the Q sort knows, okay, I now want to know where it starts. You've told me how big each element is, so I know where the beginning and end is. I mean, you know, and you told me how many elements are valued. So Q sort now knows the boundary of all your elements. Does everybody agree with that? And what is the next thing that you need to get at that's important? Is the name or a pointer to somehow your comparison function? The comparison function in C that you're expected is a function that takes two arguments, which are pointers to elements, okay? And it's going to return an answer of either minus something, zero, or plus something. Okay? And if that's true, if it gives you a negative number, that means that the thing that's pointed to by the first element goes before the second in order. If it gives you a zero, they're the same. And if you give it a minus one, it gives you a positive number. It means the second item belongs before the first. So what this Q sort does is Q sort says, you're telling me how you want the relative order of any two elements. And that's what I need in order to sort it. Does everybody agree? Or any questions about that? Okay. So for example, for a problem that I was, you know, working on, it, one of the problems I talk about in the book, I wrote the following comparison function for Q-sort. Okay? It took pointers to two elements. These elements happen to be records, okay, called suitors. Okay? And I'm first comparing these suitors on height. Is the height of one less than the other? If so, I want all the short people before all the big ones. Okay? And so I return minus 1 if the height of A is less than the height of B, plus 1 if B is bigger than A. Okay, actually, maybe I got that wrong. I think I want the... yes, right. I think that's what my convention is right. Then if they were the same height, I go and do a test based on weight. Okay? And then just return who's first or last based on weight. Okay? And then if they're the same height and weight, I do it based on the alphabetical order of their names. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I've never seen it. What does that dash greater sign mean, or dash less
than? This dash greater than?
Yeah.
This is a pointer thing. So here is a record. So A, remember, is a suitor. It's a thing that's got fields that are height fields, weight fields, and name fields. Okay? So again, if you don't use C, you don't need to know that. But basically, that's all this is saying. So this is first comparing based on height, then on weight, then on name. Okay, last name. And finally, if the last name is the same, it compares on the first name. Okay? So here's a complicated comparison function. But Q-sort is happy with it because it's going to return a minus 1, a plus 1, or a 0 for any pairs of things. Any questions? So the important thing to know is that Q-sort exists and that you don't have to write your own sorting function again. Any question? Yeah.
If we use Q-sort, wouldn't we kind of care whether it was a quick sort or not, because quick sort isn't stable?
Well, okay, so stability we'll talk about in a second. Let's not deal with stability right now.
Okay,
because I haven't talked about what stability is. And this last period may not... Well, okay. So, but I argue that... what does it know about quicksort? Quick Q sort is the C library sorting function. Works like this. You can see it's generic once you write your comparison function. Okay? It's not stable. But it also has a comparison binary search. So if you really want to do binary searches in C, you don't need to write your own binary search routine either. So the good thing is these things are there, and they're more efficient than what you will write. The bad thing is that it often takes some debugging to make sure your comparison function and your pointers and these things are right. So be careful if you use them, if it's the first time, be careful to make sure you're sorting things correctly and not adding an extra blank element or deleting or forgetting to include the last element in your array, stuff like that. Okay? And that's my only warning, but this is what I would use. Okay? What if you are a C++ person? Okay? C++ also has the standard template library, which is a good thing. Okay? So if you know, how many people here know about the standard template library? Okay? How many people use it? Okay? So if so, then you've got your own sort and stable sorting methods. Okay? So you get not only get sorting allows you to basically sort. What is this thing suggesting here? Bottom line is there's a sort using the default comparison operation and one sorting where you have to specify a binary predicate. That's like the comparison function I specified before. So you can sort integers according to the default less than operation, or you can specify a function like I did with comparison to sort it in your own order. The other thing that STL does is it also has a stable sorting routine. What do we mean by stable sorting? Does anybody know what we mean by stable sorting? Yeah?
Anything that isn't required to be changed won't be moved.
Right, so what if you, let's say that you're sorting integers. Let's say you're sorting records. And the records have a numerical field. Okay, let's say the height, and there is the name. Okay? Suppose we are sorting, we have somebody who's 10, whose name is S, somebody who's 50, whose height is 5, whose name is T, and someone whose height is 10, whose name is W. If you call quicksort on this, you are guaranteed, and you're sorting on the height keys, you're guaranteed all the 5s will appear before all the 10s. But no guarantee is made about where the relative order of the keys, which were equal. Right? Normally, this may not have been a problem for you, right? You're sorting numbers. Do you care about the order of the numbers when they're equal? No, they're identical, so that's why you've never cared. But on the other hand, if you're sorting on one key and your records have multiple dimensions, you may care about what happens on the other fields. Sure, you'll get it dragged with them. So, I mean, that's 5, it's going to give you a T. Here, you might get either an S, W, or a WS. A stable sort will guarantee that you get SW, that you get them in the same order that they were in the original. Okay? Any questions? Okay? Any idea why stable sorting might be a good thing? Why do you care? Okay? Yes?
I use it all the time in like applications, like you're looking at a spreadsheet or a database or something. Oh, I want to see everything is in this order, and then you can click on another column, and you keep your previous sort order so you can see.
So if you're going to do multiple sorts one after another, this enables you to keep the meaning of what you did before. Okay, so you say, oh, I want to find out who's the best person for me to dance with. Well, maybe I'll sort them my spreadsheet. I'll sort them by height. And now I see them by height. Well, that's not quite good enough. Let me sort them by last name. But you'd like them to be grouped still within, you know, on time. But you say which George Bush you use, president or former president. And you want to see them based on, you know, whether they're in order or not.
So stable sorts are sometimes very useful. And most sorting algorithms, fast sorting algorithms are not stable. But STL will give you a stable sort. Okay? Any questions? So what would be a good thing about a stable sort? Suppose, let's say, that you wanted to sort by multiple fields. Remember, like over here, I showed you how I would compare if I wanted to sort first by height, first by weight, then by last name, then by first name. If I knew that my sort was stable, what I could have done is first sort all the records by first name, then sort all the records by last name, stably, then sort all the records by weight, then sort all the records by height. I know that the first priority will be the height. If they have identical height, they'll be sorted then by weight. If they have identical height and weight, they then be sorted by last name. So does everybody see that if you had to sort on multiple keys, a stable sort can make it conducive to multiple passives rather than one complicated function? Any questions? Okay, so that's another issue with sorting. And the final thing to note here is that Java also has a sorted class. Okay, so the javautils.array class has various sorting methods. Okay, so they have a stable sort. They have a sort according to a comparison. And they also let you do binary search and things like this. So in principle, once you have a favorite programming language, once you learn about this, in principle, you never need to write another sort again. Any questions? Okay? Because that may be helpful this week. Okay, very, very good. Any other questions? Okay, good.